Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
But I was going into Toski Station to pick up some power converters.
Oh, no.
So today we thought we would talk about something courtesy of a little listener mail. This listener mail comes from Johnny. Johnny says, "Hey guys, I thought a good podcast would be on Laser Tag, and you guys are number 71 on iTunes. Yay for you." Thanks, Johnny. Sometimes we get all the way up into the 40s.
And sometimes we drop off that chart entirely. Yeah, we're not talking about those times.
No, let's talk about instead. Let's talk about Laser Tag. Laser Tag.
Is it out of your system now?
Not even remotely.
Yeah, long-time listeners will remember that any time we have a podcast in which that word is mentioned, Jonathan will do that at least once.
Yeah.
So, however, Laser Tag, at least in the off-the-shelf go-it-to-your-toy-store sense, does not, in fact, use lasers.
Right. At least not as the instrument of transmitting or receiving any sort of tag.
But there are some systems that do, and in fact, one of the I would consider it sort of the pioneer system for the whole thing, used by the United States military as a training exercise, does in fact use real lasers.
So you're talking about the Multiple Integrated Laser Engagement System.
Yes, I am. Otherwise known as MILES.
Yeah, my favorite was when Paulette actually sent me a link in preparation for this podcast, which was to a subset of that particular system. And here is the full title, because it tickles me.
Okay.
The Multiple Integrated Laser Engagement System Independent Target System / Wireless Independent Target System, or the MILES ITSWITS.
You know, they probably don't refer to it that way. They may actually use a number of some kind.
Yeah, or they're just like the thingy.
Yeah.
go grab the thingy.
Go grab the thingy. That's actually a pretty substantial piece of hardware. The gear that they're using is much heavier and much more substantial than the stuff that you will find at your local Toys R Us.
Right. Now, this stuff is made to really simulate battle conditions as closely as possible without really putting anyone in harm's way. Because clearly one thing you don't want to do when you're training your soldiers is shoot them.
Yeah.
That turns out to be a bad motivator.
Also, you have to train new ones. But
yeah.
But anyhow, no, they actually affix the laser to the end of an actual weapon. And, right.
And they're firing blanks.
They fire blank cartridges to simulate the actual experience of what it's going to feel like when you shoot at somebody.
Right. Because you don't want to have the experience of pulling a trigger and there's no recoil. There's no bang. There's no vibration. There's nothing other than just the fact that a little laser shoots out of the end of the gun, because then, of course, it's not going to handle the way it really would in a true combat situation.
No, but it is sort of amusing to think about actual soldiers in actual combat gear running around the field going, pew, pew, pew.
Right. You're dead. I hit you. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. I totally did.
You know what? That's funny. Because in these systems actually go back to the 1970s, from what I understand. And they actually sort of did that in the very first versions. When you would shoot somebody, the system would register that you had been hit, but people would turn them off and turn them right back on, which would essentially reboot the system, and suddenly they were alive again.
Right, and
you
there
didn't
was
get me.
There was no connection between the gun and the sensors.
Yeah.
So, which meant that
you could keep firing.
Right.
At them.
If you made it a connection where, I mean, the thing that makes sense is that if you are hit, then you are incapacitated in some way. Especially if you're hit someplace that's going to be a pretty critical wound.
Right.
If you're hitting the leg, theoretically you could keep on firing, although I would imagine most of us would probably be mostly concerned about trying to get undercover and to stop the bleeding. You know, there are people who in extraordinary circumstances can continue to fight even under that kind of wound. But the way the system theoretically should work is that if you were hit in a critical area, your gun would no longer function, because if this were a real situation, you would no longer be able to fire your weapon.
Right.
Now, the early systems did not have that connection. There was a sensor, and there were or several sensors usually placed in various strategic areas on the body. Like there might be one on the belt. There might be one or several on a vest, on the back of the vest, maybe on the helmet, sometimes on the arms and legs as well. Before in the early days, like you were saying, there was no connection. So if you were hitting the sensor, yeah, it would register that you are quote unquote dead, but you could keep firing the gun, cheating. Or as you said, you could turn it off, turn it back on. It's like rebooting a computer. Suddenly you're alive again. It's like getting extra lives. Sadly, this is not something that pertains to actual battle conditions.
No, that is correct.
It turns out that if you're shot in battle, you don't have a magic reboot button, as much as I wish it were otherwise. So, since that is kind of antithetical to the whole purpose of training, I mean, you're not training so that you win. You're training so that you understand what you need to do in an actual battle situation. So eventually, these systems became more sophisticated so that they could communicate with one another, the sensor and the gun. So that the sensor, once it was it registered a hit, would deactivate the gun so you could not keep firing and you were dead.
They're on the many generations from that very first system now.
Right. Yes. The system they use now is far more advanced. In fact, one of the things I thought was really kind of cool about the system that the military uses is that they have they can actually set the burst that comes out of the gun and tune it to the various kinds of weapons they actually use or they might actually come into contact with. Right. It's not like a laser from your assault rifle would be the same as a laser from a handgun or, say, a rocket-propelled grenade even.
Right.
They can adjust the power and the intensity and even the sensitivity of the sensors. So let's say that they'll often use armored vehicles in these training exercises. Well, armored vehicles, of course, I mean, they have armor. And that armor is pretty tough stuff, and your average gun cannot pierce it. So if you were to shoot an armored vehicle with one of these guns, your shots might hit your target, but they wouldn't register as a hit because in reality, the bullet would not penetrate the armor.
Right.
But if you had a heavier weapon and you fired at that vehicle, then it might register it as a hit because you've used a weapon that would actually be capable of doing some serious damage to that vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of, you know, sensitivity really makes it an effective tool for simulating these conditions. Now, the version that you see in the world of citizens is nowhere near as sophisticated or complex.
Or expensive.
it still can be fairly complex. It doesn't have to be the you know, stupid version, but I guess what we should probably do is let's go from the low end and work our way up.
Okay.
So a very basic laser tag system.
Yes.
As in the kind that originally came out back in the late 70s was when the first one started coming out, but 80s is really when I remember them because that's when I remember laser tag itself debuting.
Well, yes. The very first one, and I should say that I got a lot of my information from a website of a guy named Brian Farley.
Mm-hmm.
Who if you're in laser tag circles, you might know him as Tag Ferret. Apparently he's a laser tag enthusiast, but he's also the software engineer and co-inventor of the laser tag team ops line of toys, which is a newer version of laser tag.
Mm-hmm.
He had a pretty neat site that had all sorts of history. Apparently, according to what he'd said, the very first system, was the Star Trek phasers,
right,
that came out in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny because I thought that the arena style, laser tag systems were popular first and that they were a take home product based on that. But apparently I was wrong.
Right. It was the good old set to stun.
Yes. Yes.
So it was set to laser.
But it was a guy named George Carter III who was inspired by the aforementioned Star Wars, who decided he wanted to create an arena where you could play a laser gun game. And he's the one who apparently came up with the system known as Photon. His first center opened in 1984 in Houston. I'm sorry. First system opened in Dallas in 1984.
Gotcha. Well, these weapons did not use laser beams.
No, they do not.
Despite their name. What they're using are infrared signals.
Yes. An infrared LED, I believe, is usually used as the emitter for that.
And so it's outside the spectrum of visible light, so you can't, you know, we can't see it. It's mm-hmm. We do actually sense infrared radiation
mm-hmm.
as heat. So, but there's some problems with infrared signals. Now, almost all current laser tag systems, apart from the military one and a couple of commercial ones for entertainment use, still rely on infrared signals. But one of the problems is that it's a divergent beam,
mm-hmm.
meaning that it doesn't remain focused like a laser does. Doesn't have a great range. It can bounce off stuff, mm-hmm. so you can actually get hit by infrared ricochets.
Yes.
But more importantly, as far as the game goes, you don't have to be terribly accurate with one of these guns to register a hit in general. I mean, you can do things to refine it as much as possible, but in general, the further away you are, as long as you're within still, you know, the range of whatever the gun you're using is, because you can change the intensity of these things. The further away you are, the less accurate you need to be in order to register a hit.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you could tell doing some research. Actually, some of the knockoff systems, the ones that were really inexpensive, were using a form of visible light. But those were horribly inaccurate.
Right. And if you tried to play them outside, you could get hit by the sun.
Yes. That's sort of a problem because you, in general, are going to want some kind of room to run when you're playing these games.
Right.
It's possible to use a lens to try to focus it down. And some of the laser tag systems, over the years have, done this and to varying degrees of success. I mean, a lot of the earlier systems apparently used an infrared emitter with about a plus or minus 5 degree, mm-hmm. Which had sort of a medium-ish range, like 100 to 200 feet, somewhere in there. from what I read on Mr. Farley's website, some of the more advanced systems, and also read that as expensive systems, can get up to around 300 feet, 350 feet. Mm-hmm. But as you said, I'm not sure how, whether or not they're as accurate from that distance as they would be if you were closer up.
Yeah, it's very similar, and we'll talk a little bit about remote controls in a second because the two are related.
Oh, they're very related.
But it's kind of like if you have a remote control where you can just kind of point it in the general direction of the television or cable box or whatever, mm-hmm. and it'll work. That usually means that it's got a decent powered LED and an infrared LED. It may even have more than one. Mm-hmm. Some remotes have multiples, so that it gives you a wider angle that you can use to change the channel. You know, I don't know about anyone else, but I have played the game of how wide an angle can I get before I can't turn up the volume anymore.
Yeah.
Because I don't have friends. So,
also, will this work if I bounce it off the couch?
Right.
How about the ceiling?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done that.
So same thing with, some of these laser tag games is the same sort of general idea is that you don't have to be, have a dead-on aim in order to really register a hit. Now, some of them actually do use lasers in the sense that they'll use them as an effect. Mm-hmm. Like, there'll be a second LED or a second laser attached to the gun that fires visible light, but that's not what is actually registering hits. That's just – all it is just a visual effect to give it that extra little – oomph, so that when you're pulling the trigger, you're not thinking, hey, my gun's not doing anything, right?
Hmm.
So,
I hadn't actually realized that some of them actually used lasers like that.
Yeah. Again, it's just as an effect. It's not as a way to transmit a hit. And these infrared systems can get pretty advanced. Now, in the old laser tag system, it pretty much meant that any hit was going to register on your target, like any hit from any other laser tag gun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could essentially shoot yourself the very first system named laser tag, and that's laser with a Z, which came out in 1986, by Worlds of Wonder. It the gun wasn't connected at all to the sensor. So it had no idea who was shooting whom and, whose team you were on or any of that information.
Yeah. It was just a sensor and just an emitter, really.
Yes.
That's all it was.
And it helped to be standing within 3 feet of your target because otherwise, you know, it wasn't as accurate as you might like it to be.
Right. Now the more advanced laser tag systems can do much more sophisticated things. For example, mm-hmm. you could build into your sensor, a database of codes. This is, again, very similar to what remote controls do. And in the guns, you can set it so that the infrared beam that it shoots has a very specific series of pulses. So when the sensor is hit, it can actually detect who shot you.
And that's very much what goes on with your remote control.
Yeah.
Because your remote control is using a series of codes as well. Otherwise, it wouldn't be able to tell which number you're pressing if you want to change a channel or whether you want the volume up or down or power on or off.
Yeah.
Each of those has its own identifiable code. So,
if you push volume up, this series of pulses comes out. And then what happens is the receiver, the sensor picks up those series of pulses. It converts it into binary and then consults its little database to see what that command translates to. Same mm-hmm. sort of thing with laser tag. It'll look up its database and say, oh, well, player two was the one who shot you. And so you can see at the end of the game who it was that was, you know, plaguing you. And if it was someone from your own team, you can chew them out.
Yes. Yes.
But, and a lot of these systems also will include a radio frequency transmitter.
Mm-hmm.
And that is sending signals to the master control, not the master control program. I was about to go into Tron there for a second. The master control unit, which will then kind of act as a scoreboard,
mm-hmm.
you know, keeping track of who shot whom and which team is winning and that kind of thing. And, again, it's just that the sensor picks up the hit, sends a signal to the RF transmitter, which then sends a signal to the master control unit. And it keeps record of your score.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty cool system. I have never played in one of those laser tag arena type things. I've played back when I was a kid in the 80s, I actually did play with the laser tag system, mm-hmm. the the first one that hit in 86, like you said. But that was very primitive compared to these.
Yes, yes. Yeah, there's a lot of history out there about those systems. I was one of the people that apparently when World's of Wonder went into bankruptcy in 1989, it was really easy to pick up the original laser tag system on the cheap, which is what I and two of my closest friends did in high school. And I remember, you know, we'd go up to school at night and run around in parts of the area where they had, you know, the school trailers and stuff. And we would play laser tag. However, it would probably have benefited us if we had paid attention to what was going on because, as a matter of fact, somebody was actually, it's not funny. Didn't mean to laugh, but it, ironically enough, somebody was actually killed playing at a school, when a police officer who was responding to a call about somebody running around the school with a gun, you know, he was investigating, and when the kid had the laser tag gun and pointed it at him, he fired in what he thought was self-defense. So I wouldn't recommend, if you decide to go out and buy a laser tag kit, that you run around in places where it is dark and you may or may not appear to be up to no good.
Yeah, of course.
That's not a good thing.
Back in the 80s, this was back still in the time where you would be able to purchase toy guns.
Gun.
Yeah, yeah, toy guns that look like at least, you know, an analog to a real gun. Nowadays, it's all neon colors. Of course, that always raises the question in my mind, what stops someone from painting a real gun a neon color? But let's not go there, shall we?
Well, enough people paint the fake guns black, so the people
it's all just a big, crazy mix-up anyway.
Actually, in response to that, Worlds of Wonder, although it was still operating under bankruptcy conditions, did make some different white weapons, and they came out with a whole bunch of other stuff too. After they initially went under, the company reemerged a couple of years ago. A few of the original founders formed a new company, called Shoot the Moon Products, which is still in existence. And they licensed their stuff to Tiger, and they came out with a whole bunch of new stuff. They even had a blast bazooka, laser tag bazooka, that would function as a mortar, as a bazooka, or as a rifle. Depending on what it was attempting to do.
I guess that just increases the area of effect.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, if you're using it as a bazooka, it would fire in a very short pattern, but in a wide array. So virtually anybody within a certain area is going to get hit. And in mortar mode, it would actually fire in an arc and protect its sensor from an attack from the front. And if you used it as a rifle, it would actually – now I'm going from the marketing copy.
Sure. Here, so, I'm just trying to figure out how site, you but, fire infrared ray in an arc.
In an arc? Yeah, I was kind of wondering that too, but that's what it's supposed to have done.
Yeah.
And then in the rifle mode, it is a highly – you know, it's a very precise, a more precise and
right,
less
as precise
range.
As infrared gets anyway.
Well, yeah, but I don't think it was – it wasn't sending the signal out over as wide a range as when it was in the other mode, but apparently it was really neat and, again, really expensive because, you know, it was a larger toy.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And some of the guns would have – I remember reading about one that would have sensors on the gun itself so that if the gun were hit a certain number of times, it would stop working. And of course, a lot of the laser tag games that are in arenas or whatever are in systems where, similar to the military, if you are hit a certain number of times, your gun will stop working and you have to go and recharge in
yes.
order to continue playing. It's a lot simpler now than it was back in the 80s when really the only option you had back then if you wanted to try and achieve that would be to tether the gun to the vest,
right.
which, you know, then affects your mobility.
Yeah, but it would and it also would involve some hacking, especially on these off-the-shelf systems that you would get for $40 or $50.
What's interesting is I have seen plans on the internet for building your own laser tag gun and sensor systems.
Interesting.
I looked through them and they are well above my area of expertise. So after reading the first three or four steps, I said, this is a good project for someone much more electronically inclined than I.
So you're not handy with a soldering iron is what you're saying?
I'm a left-hander. I find that most tools are designed for right-handers, and that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm a sinister kind of guy.
All right.
That's an old French joke for you guys out there.
All right.
Not like an old French. It's a joke about. Never mind.
Right.
Well, let's go back to remote controls just for a second.
Sure.
So.
Oh, I know where you're going to go.
We gave the connection between remote controls and laser tag. We should, of course, say that this means remote controls that are using infrared signals.
Most modern ones do, although some of them do use radio signals.
Right. And I wouldn't be surprised if some started to use things like, you know, your over your home network system.
Or Bluetooth.
Right, or Bluetooth. That would be another one that would make sense. But if you go back to the early
I knew you were remote controls. There. I knew you hadn't forgotten this.
No, this is a sidebar on the whole laser tag remote controls discussion, because it has to do with sound as opposed to light.
Yes, it's a sidebar on how old we are.
Yeah. The old remote controls used ultrasonic signals in order to make your television do things. There didn't even need to be a battery in the remote control.
No, it didn't use a battery at all.
Because all you're doing is pressing a button, which caused a tiny aluminum bar to vibrate at a very high frequency, an ultra high frequency. And the receiver, once it quote unquote heard that frequency, would react the appropriate way. So examples would include power, volume, that kind of thing. Sort of similar to what the current remote controls do.
Right.
This meant that if you were a fidgety child who happened to have a popular toy that was around in the 70s, you could accidentally affect the behavior of your television. Would you like to reveal the name of said toy?
Oh, well, actually, for me, it was a different toy than it was for you.
Oh, what was the toy for you?
For me, you remember those, well, they still make them, the magnet kits that have all the little metal pieces, and you can basically sort of shape the magnet. They're two magnets, and then you can pick up the little metal pieces and make them into a little arc.
Sure.
Kind of make little animals out of them. Every once in a while, I'd be playing with that thing in my grandmother's house, and she had one of these TVs, with the Zenith Space Command TV remote.
Right.
And when the pieces would all fall, you know, I would basically make something that had no structural integrity, and it would fall in on itself. As soon as it made a certain noise, the channel would change on the TV.
Right.
And so I don't know what those are called, so I don't have a name for
them. So the little metal pieces would vibrate at the right frequency, and the television would think, oh, yes, I need to change the channel or adjust their volume or whatever.
Apparently a neighbor's dog who came by every once in a while too, their dog tags would jingle at the right frequency and change the channel on it.
Yeah. For me, I will tell you, it was the Slinky.
Slinky. It walks downstairs alone or in pairs.
Alone or in pairs, right. The Slinky convinced me that I had the powers of a television god, because I wouldn't even have the remote in my hands, and yet I could affect the channel and the volume, not in any predictable way. So clearly I had a long way to go, but I was a kid. I figured, you know, I'd grow into my godly powers and eventually use them for good and fighting crime in various television-related escapades. As it turns out, no, it was just that when I was moving the Slinky back and forth, it was occasionally generating just the right ultra-high frequency to affect the television.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy stuff. Oh, and I also had another toy later on in life that does relate back to laser tag.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, I can't let this go either.
Okay.
So in the late 80s, there was a series of toys and then a cartoon was truly terrible called Brave Star. Go to YouTube, search for Brave Star.
Two R's.
Yep. It's actually, it's technically three R's, because there's one after the B. But yeah, it's BraveStarr, and it's all one word. Brave Star was a space cowboy. Some people called him Maurice. And he had a horse that would turn into an anthropomorphic horse. But the toys that came out had these little laser tag type backpacks, and you could put one on the bad guy, one on the good guy, and you could actually have little shooting fights between the two, and the little backpacks would register shots and hits, which I thought was pretty darn cool, 'cause I was lame. And if you try and watch one of these cartoons on YouTube, first of all, I'm sorry. And second of all, you know, I had no taste as a kid. It's only marginally gotten better as an adult.
Ouch.
All right. Well, that pretty much wraps up this discussion on laser tag and remote controls, I would say.
We actually wrapped that up a few minutes ago.
Yeah, we kind of did. I'm sorry. But
no, it was good to go back to the Space Command thing, because I always did think that was fascinating. And, you know, I had no idea as a kid how much of a pop. It's easy to find. Go if you're interested in that remote, there are tons and tons of photos of them, of varieties of them. They had them out for years, as a matter of fact. For many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty much the first, considered, as far as I can tell, the first remote made. Only had, what, like four buttons on it?
Yeah, the remote that we had before that one was me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one that we had for a long time until we got our first cable box.
Go and change the channel, son. Or I'll wallop you.
Turning the knob, trying to get the
That was my VHF. Father, the widely published author and scholar of American literature. Clearly, he talks just like that.
I'm sure he does.
Now that we've wrapped that up, let's go mm-hmm. on quickly to our second round of listener mail. This listener mail comes from our friend Ben Ivy, and Ben Ivy is what we call a super fan. He's also a big fan of Stuff You Should Know, as well as other How Stuff Works podcasts and blogs. And Ben sent us something that was really cool. Let me read the email. We can't let Stuff You Should Know's Facebook page be the only one with fan art, so here's a little something for your consideration. It's nothing new. Perhaps in the future I'll incorporate your pictures into something. I'm a big fan of all the How Stuff Works podcasts. Please keep up the great work, Ben. So what Ben has done is he has created his own fan logo for Tech Stuff, and you can yep. actually view this on our Facebook page. We've uploaded it into an album for fan art, and it's pretty cool. Very retro, kind of has a Transformers vibe to it. The old animated series, not the new movies. But so if you guys have any fan art you want to send in, you want to try your hand at something like that, you know, send it over. We might upload it up to the fan page and have it up there on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool stuff. We look forward to seeing more of that. If you have any fan art you'd like to send, or comments, questions, more topics, you can send it to our email address, which is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
If you're a Tech Stuff fan, be sure to check us out on Twitter. TechStuffHSW is our handle, and you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TechStuffHSW.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new Tech Stuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.